When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Well, greetings and salutations, y'all. It's McCowan and Shannon on the program for today. And this is hard to really get your eye teeth around, but we're like 10 days away from the opening of training camp in the National Hockey League. And we're going to talk to Travis Green, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, a little bit about, well, all kinds of things, but among them that. I'm trying to remember what kind of training camp they had last year, John.
Okay, so if you recall, the regular season started last week in January.
Right.
So people, once we got through the holidays, players started to migrate back to their clubs, and they had probably had 10 days and one preseason game. Right. And then the 56-game schedule started, and then the schedule was rewritten how many times for COVID reasons, and games rescheduled, and everybody didn't think that the season could get fulfilled, and the NHL did a good job, and Steve Hatzepetras, the schedule maker, did a magnificent job of rescheduling all the games, and hockey gave out the Stanley Cup, I think, the second week of July.
Well, they had a brief training camp last year, but it was far from normal. I assume this year's training camp will be about as normal as it can be?
They're trying to. They're trying to make sure that we're back to the new normal with five or six preseason games and a regular season that starts on October the 12th.
Well, we'll find out from our guest what he projects the impact of that will be. Will it have any specific impact, especially at the beginning of the season, for any particular teams, if you're a veteran team versus a younger team? And he's got a lot of new players in Vancouver, right?
Jim Benning, the general manager's been very aggressive in trying to rebuild the team and getting rid of some of the guys that wanted to leave and contracts that expired. But yes, Travis has got a few new bodies to deal with.
We'll talk to him in just a couple of minutes. Travis Green, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, this time back after this. He's the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Travis Green joins us from Vancouver, where I guess you're starting to put in some work with training camp less than 2 weeks away, huh?
Yeah, we sure are. It's that time of year where coaches start to, I don't know about start, but they're dialing in finer details of training camp and scheduling and know what you're going to show your team, the order that you're going to show video, practice plans, all those kind of things.
Hey, Travis, you have two new coaches on your staff, including Brad Shaw, who's allegedly the defense guru of the National Hockey League. He's had a lot of impact in a lot of teams, St. Louis and Columbus, on record. How does that affect your meetings, and is terminology different between coaches, and how do you deal with two new coaches on your staff?
Yeah, it's, for us, we've had a lot of the same voices in our group for a little while. We added Jason King last year, who I thought did a phenomenal job. And, I think when you add new coaches, it's sometimes they're bringing a little bit different terminology, that you might use. Sometimes they're bringing some different ideas about things, and it's an adjustment period for them as well. Learning new terminology, discussing systems. We've done a lot of Zoom calls the last couple of months, just talking about our team, talking about different situations, how we want to play as a team. And, now we're getting together as a group for 2 weeks before camp and putting it all together, but it's been good. Obviously Brad brings a lot of experience. I'm looking forward to working with him, and Kyle brings a lot of some freshness to our group, and different type of enthusiasm, which I think is also important with your group. And I'm looking forward to working with both guys.
How will we notice Brad's effect on the blue line?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think it's to be seen. He's going to help us oversee a lot of our defensive systems in our team and have input. He'll help in, you know, individual work as well with our group. And one thing about the NHL is, so there's only so many systems that are going to be played. And then a lot of teams do the same things. You know, a lot of it is getting your team to buy into playing that way. We've had a lot of offensive-minded young players come through. And, you know, they do the offensive stuff naturally. And getting them to make sure that they're doing the right things on the defensive side is part of the process. And I the good thing about coaching our young guys that I've enjoyed is they are open-minded. They want to do what's well for the group. They want to win. And ultimately, that's part of the game that we need to improve in. And we know that. You know, I also think that if we have the puck a little more, we're gonna be better defensively as well. And you know, it's not just D-zone coverage that you're talking about. You're talking about how you manage the puck through the neutral zone. It's part of your game defensively. And, you know, if your overall game improves, if your team improves, you know, obviously your defensive game is going to improve as well. Mm.
So I'm intrigued by this, and I'm not suggesting anything with regard to you specifically and your situation now with two new assistant coaches, but Theo, you have philosophies that you have developed over the years and have used as a head coach. When somebody new comes in, if they have a theory that is contradictory to yours or isn't exactly what you have ascribed to in the past, how do you manage that? Are you uber confident in yourself to the point where you tell them, well, this is how we do it here? Or are you more receptive to somebody else's ideas?
Well, coaches can be stubborn. I know that.
Really? I'm shocked.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. But I do think coaches also have to be open-minded. You have to assess your team. You have to make adjustments. We change some of the things we do, you know, mid-season a lot. You know, I think every team does that. When you start to see where your team is struggling, certain parts, maybe the quickness of your group, if you're tired, things are not what you thought they were. And, you know, you also have to make sure that you're going to blend with someone that you're going to work with. It's not like we just hire these two coaches without talking to them and getting their philosophies. I think personally, I like coaches that will bring new ideas. That's what it's all about. We talk about having open communication with our players. It's the same way in our coaches' room. I don't want coaches on the staff that are afraid to voice their opinion and challenge thoughts and ideas. But we're also a tight enough group that we understand that, you know, not everyone is going to see a play exactly the same way. I think I like the way Brad thinks the game. You know, he's like you guys said, he's been around a long time, got a good eye for the defensive game. And I believe our team will be better in a lot of different areas this year. And I know defensively is one of them that we need to be better in.
On your whiteboard, how many players do you think are different on the roster this year from last?
Man, we were just talking about that this morning. Could be a lot of new players.
Yeah.
I think I've got, I've written down on one of my sheets right in front of me, up to 8 to 10 new players on the team. We've probably got between 10 and 15 guys that have only been here 2 years or less. And that's a lot. And I'm looking forward to having a training camp. We need it. This group needs it in particularly just because of how many new players we have and getting the group, not just together on the ice, but off the ice, bonded together as a group.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to be said for playing for each other. playing for the right cause, playing to win, and ultimately doing whatever it takes for the team to win, and not necessarily whatever it takes for a person to have individual success. And I find that those go hand in hand anyway. Play to win and play for each other, you usually play your best hockey.
So we talk a lot about social chemistry in this business, and I'm sure you do too. And, you know, John and I have talked a lot. I don't know how much you've watched the Toronto Blue Jays play, but the chemistry that they have in their dugout is something that I've been watching them since day one. I don't think I've ever seen, but you can't manufacture that. It kind of has to happen. How do you enhance the chance of your group getting together?
Well, since I've played the game, coached the game, it's talked about so much. And like you said, you can't just manufacture, guys liking each other, guys getting along.
Yeah.
I think it starts by having good people in your room. You also got to have a couple guys that are fun loving guys, I think, that bring the group together. And at the end of the day, nothing brings a team together like winning. And I think that's the teams that win are probably the closest teams as well. If you really went and looked through it. But I've also played on teams that had success. There were pretty good teams that maybe they didn't get along quite as well inside the locker room, but when they went on the ice, they played. End of the bottom line is you got to win, but there is something to be said for having a close team that enjoys being around each other as well.
Any chance that what you went through with all the 23 or 24 days of COVID last year can be one of those things you can make a positive now?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really looked at it that way. When you go through a trying time, you learn from it. You look back and think about maybe things you could have done better, would have changed. I think it's something that we can't dwell on last season as well. Over with and done with. And for us, it's about coming back and getting right back to where we were going a year before last season, and taking another step from that season.
The organization has added two more guys that we haven't talked about yet, and that's I guess they're rejoined the organization, and that's Daniel and Henrik, the Sedins.
Yeah.
What kind of interaction will you have with them over the next little while, or at all?
No, I think I'll probably have a lot of interaction with them. Just last 2 days, they've come in and sat with us, sat with the coaches. I think they enjoy that part of the game. It comes more natural to them than the business side or the management side, the actual playing. We had them in, they just happened to pop in at the right time where we were watching some D zone coverage, and they sat with us as well. I've been in contact with them since they retired. They've watched our team. I think they're both very sharp individuals. I like how they see the game. And over the course of the last three seasons, I've talked to them about our team just to get their opinion once in a while. We have good conversations, and I know we're going to have that this season as well, especially having them on board.
They see the game a lot different than most people. Their chemistry is so it look they make it look so simple. Travis, how do you translate that?
When you say when they see the game though, like it's playing the game and seeing the game, and you'd be surprised at how the things they believe in as far as 200-foot hockey, playing the right way, simple things like having your stick on the ice, stick on puck. As smart as they were and the chemistry that they had, which, you can't create, and as great of players as they were, Hall of Fame players those things you can't just teach other people, but when you talk to these guys about hockey and how the game is played, they get it. They understand what it takes to win, and it's not the offensive stuff that I'm talking about. And that ultimately is what you hope all your players get to, your star players.
Well, you get to, I don't know if you've even thought about this, but will you have them address your team at some point in time? Is there value in that?
I'm not sure, to be honest. We haven't got there. I think just having them around is going to be a lot for our group. It's going to help our group. Also, them, you know, this is new for them as well, being on this side of it.
Sure.
And how they, you know, even act or their communication with players is going to be a little different than they have in the past. And I think, you know, we're not going to script anything. We're going to just take it day by day and see what, you know, there might come a time during the season where I think it's valuable for them to talk to the group. And I think that's part of coaching. How do you motivate your group at different times of the year? I'm not a big believer in just scripting how I'm going to do things as, you know, at this time. You know, sometimes your team needs a kick in the ass. Sometimes they need someone from the outside to come in and talk to them. Maybe it's just a change of pace.
Let's take a quick break. Travis Green is with us, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. We'll come back after these messages. With Travis Green, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, you've got an interesting family situation. If I'm not mistaken, your family is still in Southern California. Is that right?
Yeah.
How do you manage that? It's been the course of a long stretch.
You know, I guess it's become the norm for us, the coaching world. It started a long time ago as far as I have a son that is autistic and was diagnosed 10, 11 years ago. He's 12 now. And at that time, we just felt like it was the best for him to be in California. We got him into a place where he could get therapy that we thought was amazing for him. And my kids were in school there and we just felt like it was the best thing for them. And we've managed our way through it. And I think that's part of the hockey life sometimes where you're working so much during the season, but you know, Vancouver's not too far from there. So now that, you know, COVID was a hard part because couldn't cross the borders or anything like that. So that was difficult, but it'd be nice that the borders are open now.
So do they come and see you or you shoot down there every once in a while?
Yeah, no, I don't during the season, it's pretty hard to get away.
Yeah.
But they'll be able to come up here periodically now.
Well, you'll get an Olympic break to go home.
Yeah, for sure.
So that'll be all right. Hey, so the two biggest names in Vancouver right now that are Canucks that aren't Canucks are Hughes and Pettersson.
Right.
You're the coach. You're not the manager. It's not in your bailiwick. How do you sit on the sidelines and watch this play out, hoping that they're coming to camp?
Patiently.
Yeah.
You know, I think the common sense will always prevails. We got two young players that are big parts of our future. You know, obviously their agents have a job to do. Our management has a job to do. And I think at the end of the day, you want to find deals that both sides are happy and not one side is, you know, winning or losing. And, you know, for me as a coach, I just think it's really important that they're here for camp. We have two young players that are, you know, obviously going to make a big jump in salary. They're big parts of our group. And, but yet they're younger players on our team still. And, with improvement to be made in their game and in our team and where we want to go, I think it's important that, both the players are here for training camp because we need them. We need them to be here and be ready to go for game one.
Do you have any level of confidence that they will be there at this point?
I do. I mean, I've said it the last couple of weeks that I'm confident they'll be here. And I think that confidence level comes from, you know, A, us knowing that it's important they're here, and B, these two young men, I've said it for years, they're humble guys. They want the team to do well. And I think it'll be important for them to be here as well.
So how many times you calling Jim a day to say, are they signed yet?
Yeah.
I haven't been bugging Jim about it, to be honest. I think it'll get done. I think, and I really believe that, like I said, it'd be different if we had a couple of players that I think were, you know, disgruntled players. But I think they really believe in our group and want to be here bad. And, you know, Petey missed a big part of the season last year and a training camp is going to be important for him. And, you know, you're not talking about two players that don't want to be here, or two players that the team don't know that are a big part of their future. So I got to think that both sides will get to an agreement, knowing how important a training camp is for both the players and the team.
And so would you continue and maintain your communication with the players just on the practical day-to-day stuff?
I have. I've talked to them. You know, I've kind of paramount over the summer. I haven't talked to them in a little bit here. The coaches are kind of in our meetings, and we're letting the players kind of breathe a little bit now because, you know, it's going to get – we're going to talk to them a lot here coming up soon.
Yeah.
And I would think you would be – I mean, you're not going to – obviously, you're not going to talk to them about contract situation, but are you more reluctant to talk to a player in that kind of situation just about the everyday thing? Or you just do you govern yourself the way you would under normal circumstances?
Yeah, if they were here right now, I would talk to them just like it was normal.
Yeah.
I'd probably make a little bit more of an effort right now not to reach out to players and call, because we're going to overload them soon. But it was probably the last time I've had contact with them, or no different when the last time I talked to, you know, Pete Miller or Horvat or anyone on the team. And it was just talking hockey, not talking about the contract, but also not hiding from it, telling them I understand that they don't have it done and hoping to get it done soon.
You talked about Bo there and Miller. You've got to be pleased with your leadership group on this hockey club.
I am. It's young still. But I have a lot of belief in the guys that are here. I know them well now. I've seen us go from the Twins leaving to building for a couple of years to playing their hearts out to get into the playoffs. And last year was a tough year for our team, especially coming off that playoff year.
Yeah.
You know, from the outside, we didn't have a good season. But on the inside, you learn and you grow a lot as a group when you're going through some hard things. And that's the same thing as coaches' relationships with players. You grow through good times and successful moments the same way you grow through tough moments. So I do. I have a lot of faith in those guys.
You're in a market in Vancouver that is an intense hockey market. It is almost, it might be one of the most unforgiving hockey markets in the National Hockey League. Shannon's laughing. So
because it is, Travis and I have talked about this. It is relentless is what it is.
Well, but the unforgiving is the word that comes to my mind. Like if you're playing well, great. They love you. But the minute things aren't going exactly right, they lose their minds. And I mean, we're in a market in Toronto where failure has become the norm.
Well, Travis played here. Come on.
Yeah. And he understands it. But tell me what it's like being the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, given the peculiarities of the marketplace.
You know, for me, it's an honor. It's a privilege. I know you talked about that with the fan, but for me, that's the passion that the city has and how bad they want to win. I grew up in BC, and I think people of British Columbia, they really love the game. They love the team. They want the team to do well. You know, some of it's media driven, that when things aren't going well, people have jobs to do, and I understand that as well. But I do know, I've got to know some of the people in the city, and the passion that I see and feel every day here is you wouldn't want it any other way. I've played in markets where it's not like that. And I can tell you that, you know, playing in the NHL or coaching the NHL, it is a privilege. It's what you dream of doing. And with that, you know, sometimes it comes expectations and people want to win. They want their team to win the Stanley Cup. So, it's not all roses, though, like you said. It's not all butterflies and rainbows every day. And there are some days where, as a coach, you can get a little upset with certain things that maybe you're asked or something like that. And that's just because your passion is as well. and you want the team to do well. And I get it though.
Hey, you played a long time in the NHL, but you never played for the Canucks. Did you want to play for the Canucks as a kid?
You know what? I was thankful every year I played in the NHL. You give me a jersey, I'm going to wear it and wear it proud.
When you're growing up in the Kootenays and you're on the pond, who are you as a Canuck player or who were you?
No, I was a big Guy Lafleur guy when I first started playing. Loved watching him play. Obviously, the Canadians were winning a lot, and it kind of turned into early teens, I guess. I liked Mario Lemieux a lot. Didn't like him as much when I played against him, but right. liked watching him.
The
impactful the 82 Canuck team, you would have just been a teenager in the Kootenays, and that team had a lot of impact on a lot of us in British Columbia over the years.
Sure,
so that might have made you a Canuck, except you'd have to wear those darn sweaters.
The white towels and you know, King Richard and watching that, it was hard not to get be proud to be in BC at that time. And I was fortunate enough that I had Steve Bozak live just down the street from me, a couple houses down. His mom was a librarian and teacher at our school. So he was kind of the guy that I watched growing up a lot too.
Pretty good hockey player.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be an interesting season. I'm inclined always to ask whether you're optimistic or how optimistic you are, but I'm not going to ask you that because I think everybody knows that, the Hughes and Pettersson thing has to get resolved and you've got 8 to 10 new players. So at this point, it's really hard to assess what you're going to look like and what you're going to be. But it's a full season, we assume and hope, knock on wood, no COVID issues this year.
Yeah.
And so it's really normal, and we wish you good luck. And hopefully we'll have a chance to chat during the course of the season.
Well, thanks, guys. It's been fun talking with you, and thanks again.
It'll be more fun the next time we talk. We'll do it again.
All right, that's a deal.
You'll have more fun. Absolutely.
All right, Travis Green, the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, back after this.
See you guys.
Obviously, our thanks to Travis Green for joining us. I think I assessed it accurately, didn't I?
Oh, yeah.
The prospect of the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, I don't even know how you evaluate the team.
Well, there's Jim Benning has been, the most aggressive general manager in the offseason.
Well, I agree.
With what he's done and how he's trying to improve this hockey team. They've got, they needed to get rid of some baggage. They did. But they also got some good young players like Dickinson out of Dallas that can be difference makers. So, as you said, get the two kids signed, and I'm sure they will be signed for camp, and see what happens. They've got some really good parts, Bob. Thatcher Demko has become a quality goaltender in this league, and it all starts with goaltending. And if Hughes is playing well, then they're in pretty good shape. They got Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who played in Arizona, coming to play in a real hockey market now, and if he can get to the level that we all expect Ekman-Larsson to have been for so many years, then this team can be a difference maker in that Pacific division with Seattle arriving. It's going to be an interesting division of who's going to make the playoffs and who isn't.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Seattle next week. Yes sir,
Ron Francis on Monday or Tuesday.
Meanwhile, elsewhere, We keep talking about the same old thing day after day after day. Another Canadian wins at the U.S. Open. The Blue Jays rattle off yet another victory, a sweep at Yankee Stadium. And, I mean, they almost don't look like they can lose a game.
No.
I'm sure they can, but they'll figure out a way. But, boy, they look good. And this is sort of what I don't want to put words in your mouth, but very early in this season, maybe even a little bit last season, I thought, boy, this is a team that could be really good if they can get their starting rotation solid. It's as good as any rotation in the game right now, just night after night after night. Manoah made a couple of bad pitches, but overall, he good performance. they get great starting pitching every night.
And let me remind you, a four-game sweep at Yankee Stadium without the guy that might win the Cy Young, without Robbie Ray.
Well, he was there. They just didn't. He wasn't.
No, in the but he wasn't one of the. What he wasn't one of the four pitchers. I mean, so that speaks to how well that rotation is going and how deep they are on the mound right now. That's and then hey, listen, Vladdy's hitting again. When you see Guerrero, I mean,
Bo had a couple of hits last night.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, they are they're doing. And Buck Martinez talked about it on Wednesday with us. Is that it's not just one guy.
It's everybody.
It's everybody. It's, you know,
different guys every night. And it's not one guy. Usually it's a group of three or four every night that kind of get hot.
Yeah. And even listening to Montoyo's demeanor in his Zoom call after the game, it's there's a buoyancy in everybody right now. It is something to behold, something to behold.
Well, it's a 7-game win streak now. And I think 10 of 11 or 11 out of 12, I can't remember.
Yeah. Well,
but
I think it's 8. Bob. I actually think it's 8.
Is it 8 now?
I think so.
I think you might be right. Meanwhile, on the tennis courts, here's what's interesting. The teenager, Leila Fernandez, is now about to enter a match in which she isn't playing somebody who is a seeded player with only one digit
right
after the seed. She's playing somebody who's ranked below her in the world, who qualified to get into the U.S. Open and by about 2 months is younger than her.
Right. Well, yeah. And two Canadian born.
Canadian born players.
Two Canadian born players in the Wimbledon.
Emma was born in Toronto.
US Open final.
Yeah. Emma born in Toronto, moved to Britain when she was 2 years old, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonder if that'll be a story tomorrow.
It better be. It better be. How about Steve Nash sitting in the box?
That was interesting too.
And the reference to Steve Nash and her father's love of Steve Nash, and Nash's drive, and you're wondering. I mean, Steve Nash, obviously the coach of the Brooklyn Nets, but it is something to behold that Canada has made a huge impact in New York City this week.
Well, it is easy to favor Fernandez if you've watched her throughout this tournament, which John and I both have. But I watched Emma play last night.
Well, you don't want to say her last name either, do you?
No, she's scary good.
Yes. Yes.
It's going to be an interesting match. And an 18-year-old who had to go through qualifying. I believe this is right. I think the first qualifier ever to make the final at the U.S. Open,
or I think you're right,
at a major, maybe.
Mm, wow.
Ever. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. It's a hell of a story. And listen, we haven't even talked about Felix yet. So,
well, Felix goes up against Medvedev tonight, and he's the number two ranked player.
Yeah.
Behind Djokovic. It'll only get tougher in the final, assuming Djokovic makes the final, and I think we all believe he will. But tough one tonight for him.
By the way, you are right. It's the first qualifier at a major tournament.
There you go.
You are correct. So
there you go.
Pretty impressive.
Boy, I have never been a big tennis guy. I like tennis. I like watching the major championships. I have watched more of this United States Open than I've watched of anything. I look forward to it. Fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of the Canadians have been in prime time, which means I got the Blue Jays out of one eye and the tennis out of the other eye.
You need three TVs.
I know you have. I have them.
Yeah, but they're still in boxes.
They're in boxes right now.
I tell you what, it's easy and fun to watch tennis right now. And I wouldn't normally tell you that if we're going to Indian Wells or we're in Cincinnati, but hey, there's something special about the U.S. Open.
But for me, it's all about the fact that there are Canadians in it.
Oh yeah, no.
I mean, absolutely that's right. The intrigue. If the if the two Canadians go out before the final, I'm not sure I'll watch either final.
Yeah.
Fernandez is already in the final, so I will watch that.
So Bob, just the other thing to keep in mind when you watch her play.
Yes, sir.
She's 5'6", and she hits the ball with such velocity. I mean, it is phenomenal of her ability, and her racket control is unbelievable.
She's tiny.
She's 5'6".
She's 5'6", but she's not physically, she does not appear to be physically strong. She looks fragile almost.
Yeah. By the way, there was a great shot after her match was over last night as she left the court. And it's quite emotional and a moving piece of video if you go find it on the web, where she meets the original 9 female starters of the Virginia Slims tournament, the series, which really was the advocacy of women's tennis in the early 70s. And who the lady that introduced her to all of them was Stacey Allister. And Stacey, again, who has had a huge impact on tennis, not only in our country, but around the world as one of the leaders in women's tennis. So that to me was, I was glued watching her meet Billie Jean King and Rosie Casals and the rest. It was, to me, that was, hey, that was 1972. She was born in what, 1993, 92?
She'd have to read.
Oh, sorry, 2002. Sorry, 2002. I do my bad math. 2002. And to be able to walk in and see history like that would have been an awe-inspiring moment.
Oje Aliassime against Medvedev tonight. Blue Jays in action as well. And we're going to take the weekend off. And
good on you.
Something special for you on Monday. We're not going to tell you about it. Somebody else will. But we'll be here. Have a nice weekend, Mr. Shannon.
I'll be here, Bob.
Thank you. We'll see you then. Goodbye, everybody.